What Braves show up tonight, tomorrow, and on Thursday? Now, there is rain in the forecast, and they are aware of that. I'm saying the Braves, the MLB, guys, they'll adjust. If we need to make a game up, Mike said it. This is too big for them not to. But, you know, you got to play what's in front of you. Tonight, we got to handle business. And looking at this rotation and the way it sets up, Schwellenbach tonight, Mike, hopefully we can go out and get a dub. We need to sweep to really feel a lot better about our chances because, you know, if that doesn't happen, Mike, and let's say, God forbid, the Mets sweep us, well, we're done. We're not getting in. We're vying for that last playoff spot in the wild card. But we've not swept a three-game series, Mike, since June.
Ooh, yikes.
Middle of June.
Now, we looked at it earlier. The only, I guess, wild card, pardon the pun, in this would be, do the Brewers rest people because they're kind of locked in? They could still try to win out and improve their position, but it sure looks like, you know, Phillies, Dodgers, and the Brewers are a couple games behind. So the Brewers could then set their rotation and not have to go for the gusto when they play the Mets in those final three. Braves get the Royals, who are still vying for, obviously, better position, and then the Padres play the Diamondbacks. So those guys would both be going for it and obviously leaving nothing on the table. So I don't know. First things first, just beat the Mets, right?
Get it done. Yeah, that's what you have to do. 404-726-0929. Asked you earlier, find us on social media. What's your confidence level in us right now heading into this series? This is the biggest one of the year. And again, remember, they just came off of winning a series against the Phillies without Lindor. They're playing really good baseball. Lineup is out, by the way. We'll talk more about this. Wes Durham is going to join us coming up in about 15 minutes. We'll talk to him about the Falcons. Turning the page, moving forward, got a big division game in front of you on Sunday against the Saints. So Wes will join us, the voice of our Atlanta Falcons. All right, we said we had something we needed to play. And for those of you who listen every day, and we hope you do. All right, thank you for listening to Atlanta's number one sports station. It's number one sports show, Dukes and Bell. My thing this offseason was and continues to be that Kyle Pitts was going to be the most important piece on this offense. And the reason I felt that way is if he played up to his capability, Mike, he opens up things on this offense we haven't had. So he gets the touchdown in week one, blown coverage, great. He helped us in the Kansas City game. Okay. But Mike and I are still saying it's not enough. And this was part of the conversation on ESPN with Ryan Clark and our buddy Dan Orlowski. And we just want you to hear this, and then Mike and I will discuss. Mm-hmm. But as we talk about where this offense needs to go, this is what people are saying.
I think if you're Atlanta, you sit there and go, well, we proved that we could play with them. I mean, that's the defending back-to-back Super Bowl champs. This is a team that has high expectations in Atlanta. We proved that we could play with them. But I also think you walk away sitting they're going to beat them. We got to be perfect almost. And I think that's the growth for this football team. There's no question this team could play with anybody in the NFL. Those final plays at the end of the games, that's when they're going to have to make the different play to go win the game.
But Dan, you're searching for moral victories in a league with no morals.
Oh.
It's not about whether or not you can play with these teams. It's about can you beat these teams. And to do that, I believe Kyle Pitts has to become more of a factor on this offense. And Marcus, I want you to hold on to your tie. I can't believe I'm saying this. They need to go watch Kellen Moore and the way that he used Dallas Goedert against the New Orleans Saints.
So there you go. And I got the full video up at Mike Bell ATL. But yeah, saying that Pitts needs to be a bigger piece. Now, Dallas Goedert got involved because of Devontae Smith's injury, but still the Saints had no answer for him, Carl, especially with the game on the line.
Yeah.
And I know
10 balls for $170.
And we've talked about this a lot because, look, Kyle Pitts, here's the thing. Through three games, our boys got 105 yards receiving. Did get a touchdown in the first game against Pittsburgh. But that's the kind of stuff we're expecting to see in one game. You know, and that's where it's hard, Carl, to be a fan of Zach Robinson's offense as we're watching it evolve and say, do you not regard Pitts as a guy that can move the chains and be an elite, you know, mismatch at, you know, sort of hybrid tight end wide receiver?
Now,
eight out of 12 targets, 105 and a touchdown. That's what we drafted him at fourth for one freaking game, not three.
I agree. Goddard's got over 240 yards right now, 239 on the season after that big game against the Saints where he had 170. Mike, we're on the same page. But the irony for me is we actually got the call or at least the matchup we wanted on the pass interference no call that we talked about yesterday where Pitts is in the end zone. That play's there. It's there. The ball wasn't delivered where it should have been, but the fact is that's what you wanted, and that's what I want to do. I want to go to him, high point the ball, Mike, let him go up and make plays, 50-50 balls. But I don't think he's being used enough. And you know, in the big scheme of things, we know this. Bijan, just like Christian McCaffrey, is going to be the guy that stirs a drink. I'm cool with that. I have no issues. His talent is there. We've seen it. But I also need a mix, Mike, of Drake and Pitts. You guys know I love Darnell Mooney, and he's been showing up. Darnell had eight targets, eight catches on Sunday. So he's showing up. But that mix between those two other studs that we have, and for me, Pitts is a take-the-top-off-the-defense guy. I'm looking at Dallas Goedert, Mike, run down the field like he is, you know, he's like OJ. And I'm like, who is this guy? Pitts is way faster than Goddard.
You and I were watching that up at the Nest over at Signia, and it was like, Goddard looked so slow they were going to play the Chariots of Fire theme in the background.
That's terrible.
Bum. Yeah, I mean, but he's a weapon. Look, we have gone round and round with some of the audience. Some guys feel we're too hard on Pitts. Look, I think Pitts, we all agree, is 100% now.
Yes.
So let's stop with the excuses. Zach Robinson's got to dial him up.
Yes.
And this is why when you and I were talking, I think last weekend before I went on vacay, it was like, do we know how Zach Robinson views Kyle Pitts? Because if he doesn't view him as an elite, then we're really blowing it. Then we should just trade him and just let him. Then we just have our normal, you know, regular tight ends and just garden variety tight end, and that's it. This is a guy that's supposed to be a mismatch. You just touched on it. All the things that he's supposed to be now should be happening, especially as Cousins gets to be whatever he is, 100% Cousins or 100% okay with that Achilles.
Yeah. Now, before we get to an NFL blitz, and we wanted to discuss this because Ryan Clark is right. You're trying to, you know, have it both ways, and you can't. I feel like, Mike, somebody just asked me, so what, do you want to be a diva? No, I'm not saying that. But I have no issues with guys who should be asking for the ball, who want the ball, who need the ball to say that. And I don't know if that's Kyle Pitts. I just don't. Again, I'm not going to dismiss how young he is. Again, when we drafted him, he's barely 20 years old.
Right.
You kind of come into your own, but my point is I don't think that's in him, okay? I don't think he's sitting there going, Kurt, look, man, I'm wide open. You need to hit me more. But I do want to involve him more in the game plan, and that is what we're talking about. It is not his fault right now if we're not throwing him the football as much as maybe we should. And is this on Kirk, Mike, who says, hey, I don't have quite a rhythm with everybody that I'd like, except maybe Darnell, I want him a better rhythm? Or is this on the OC and saying, hey, right, here's the play, like the goal line play. We're at the 6-yard line. We are throwing two Pitts. I don't give a damn who's on him. Throw it.
High point, go get it. Again, now Cousins, we talked about that pass interference all day yesterday. Kirk's got to know what this guy's capabilities are and get the ball up in the air. That was not a great throw from Pitts, even with the defender certainly pass interfering and draped all over him. Pitts was fourth. Now, we didn't draft Jamar Chase because we still had Calvin Ridley. We didn't know that Calvin Ridley was going to have his off-the-field issues and wind up gone. But, yeah, I mean, imagine having Jamar Chase on this team or Penei Sewell, you know, who certainly has been established as one of the elite offensive linemen. Now, Micah Parsons, nobody was high on in the top five. That's just, you know, that's the parallel universe where if you'd known, yes, you would have taken him. But certainly amongst the guys that were considered the fourth overall pick, got to be better than that. So we'll continue the conversation. I just want to see Zach use him in the more dynamic, bottom line, just the more dynamic role you just laid out.
Yeah, and we got a lot of time. I'm not throwing in the white flag yet, but this is something I've been talking about all offseason.
I think we are frustrated because of the things that haven't worked at the end of games that they just talked about in the soundbite we played with Orlovsky and Ryan Clark. But there is an evolution, and we've seen a lot of teams. I mean, you think the Bengals are not going to make the playoffs at 0-3? I mean,
it's hard for me to imagine that they're not going to turn this around.
Once they get their defense healthy, and that's why they were able to, unfortunately, they couldn't get the stops last night, and Jaden Daniels looked freaking great. But I just think that there's teams like the 49ers. Now, if you don't have McCaffrey, that's a different conversation for the 49ers at 1-2. But certainly we are going to get better. There will be more familiarity, and I think Zach's going to learn on the job. But I don't, Carl, there's no way this team doesn't win 10 games this year, is it?
Who are you talking about?
Falcons.
I got them winning more than that.
I mean, this was some guys had 11, some guys still feel it's 11 or 12. We're getting through the hardest part of the schedule. But as you and I always say, just when you think you know what the schedule's going to look like, someone's rising, someone's emerging, and maybe some teams on the schedule are better than we thought they were going
to
be.
By the way, NFL Blitz is brought to you by our friends at Priority Men's Medical Centers. Check them out at PriorityMen'sMedical.com. As we talk about this matchup with the Saints, they are without their Pro Bowl center, Eric McCoy. He is out 6 to 8 weeks, growing injury. Mm. He is going to be sidelined. Big injury for them. For Carr, just like with Cousins, when you lose your center, you know, there's a little comfort level there. And running the football, and it all starts with those calls on the offensive line, that's a big, big deal for the Saints. But we're without our guy, too, right now.
Mm. Earlier today, guys, we were talking about the last night, the early game, the appetizer. Boy, that was tough, that Jacksonville Bills game. Trevor Lawrence, some guys felt we were making excuses for his wide receiver core. The comps on Trevor Lawrence, it's nearly identical to Daniel Jones. Daniel Jones of the Giants, which most people feel will be replaced at some point. I love Sunshine. Everyone loved the story, Carl, as the kid at Clemson getting the natty, but he's not been anything in the NFL.
Wes Durham's going to join us, the voice of our Atlanta Falcons, next on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. I was just sitting here listening to Mike Tomlin, my twin, and he said, when a reporter asked him, we're 3 weeks in, why have you not named Justin Fields a starter? He said, there's no need to. And I'm laughing because he said, no matter how many times you guys ask me or different ways you ask me, I'm not answering that because there's no need to answer it right now. He said, when Russell Wilson gets back to 100%, when we'll need to answer that question, I will. Mike Tomlin's right, though. I don't need to answer it because Fields has been the guy, and this is where we're at right now. And, Mike, it's kind of interesting, but everybody wants him to say, yes, he's my QB number one.
Well, when you're looking like the, 2002 Tampa Bay Buccaneers or the 2000 Baltimore Ravens, you can win with, no disrespect, I know he still has a house here, Brad Johnson, or Trent Dilfer. And, you know, if you're doing exactly what Arthur Smith's asking, which he is, and you got a defense which can just knock people out, go for it.
No
reason. You don't really need to deal with Russell's drama.
Let's talk to Wes Durham, the voice of our Atlanta Falcons. Wes, Sunday was electric. It was all day. I mean, listen, Mike and I had a show. We did a special version of Dukes and Bell 1-4 down there at the Signy Hotel. And people were amped up all day. And just not the game, just real quick, just like, you know, you calling these games. Those Sunday night games, man, they feel big. They are big. What was it like for you?
Yeah, I noticed that going into the stadium on Sunday afternoon, there were already more people around the stadium, you know, 3.5 hours before game time than there are any other game, right? I mean, that was the first thing. The second thing was is that now Kansas City had a lot of fans there, but that's who Kansas City is. It's become one of those teams that nationally has gained a brand. So, you know, the longstanding Chief fan has now been joined by people in the last 5 or 6 years, right? Which you understand.
Yes.
And I'm not saying that's a bad thing. That's just what happens nationally with NFL fans, because you live in a marketplace where you have some connection to a team or you like a player or whatever the case may be. I mean, that's how I went from liking the Cowboys to the Steelers to the Giants when I was a kid growing up in North Carolina, because we didn't have pro football, right? I mean, just the way it was. And I think a lot of people have glammed on to the Chiefs, and rightly so. They've been very successful. So, but I noticed, Carl and Mike, that both fan bases were in the seats early. Now, you know, that late kickoff kind of begs some of that. The 1 o'clock game's a little trickier from an urgency standpoint to get everybody in place and the kids and everything and go. But nonetheless, I thought that was a huge boost. And then early on, they had something to get behind because Atlanta scored early, and ended up being a really, really fun night that you wish you'd have won the ball game. But in terms of environments, it was pretty good. And I'm hoping that maybe Sunday we can find a way to replicate it for a 1 o'clock kick against the Saints.
I'm with you, Wes. I just felt that, you know, like just everything else this season and the two losses, there's plays, moments you want back. And there's just some things that, you know, you feel you see. It's not doom and gloom. I'm feeling good. I think we're still scratching the surface of everything that we're going to be. I'm just curious what we were talking about this before you came on. As Zach Robinson learns more about the tools he's got in that toolbox, and a lot of folks talking about Kyle Pitts, needless to say, that was a big moment. No call. We get that. But I think we got to utilize Kyle Pitts a little bit more in this game plan.
Well, I think the variety and the depth of the offense is going to be really interesting, especially in these three division games we've got coming up. I think Kyle's going to be a big part of it. You know, I thought he was productive the other night when given the opportunity. I thought Drake was as well. I think we talked about Darnell Mooney a little bit last week, right? Mm-hmm. I think Mooney is the guy who's really starting to step forward for sure. And I'm pretty excited about where this team can go. The key thing here is you got to do it in some degree of success. And, you know, look, I think the defense has played pretty well, in all honesty, given all the newness and all the things coming together in the first three games. And this Sunday thing is going to be quite a challenge. I mean, New Orleans is not just a team that has scored a lot of points. They've scored a lot of points early. It's kind of scary, the number they've put up. So I think you're going to have to be on your game, really, on both sides of the ball Sunday. In a way that maybe Carl and Mike, you haven't had to be in the first three games. You know, you could kind of, you know, stick and move and bob and weave and feel everything out in the first couple, three games. But when you look at New Orleans, they're outscoring opponents 34-3 in the first quarter and 68-19 in the first half. So, I mean, you sit around and it's going to look like, you know, it's going to look like NC State and Clemson the other day. It's going to be 28-0. You're going to be going, what's happening? So, I think you really got to be cognizant of how explosive they are, and at least early in these first three games on Sunday.
How much credit do you give to Jimmy Lake, Coach Raheem Morris, the defensive staff as a whole? I mean, listen, Patrick Mahomes hasn't looked great, but he threw the ball 39 times. I mean, he only had 217 yards. If you told me Patrick Mahomes was going to throw the ball 39 times, I would have thought he had, you know, close to 400 yards. I thought we did a really good job, and it was really situational football, Wes, with the defense. I'm just – that's probably the side of the ball I've been most impressed with.
Yeah, I think so. And I think that, you know, and look, let's be honest. We knew Jesse Bates was a really good player, and Justin Simmons is a good player, right? And so your back end middle is really good. And make no mistake, they're not throwing at 24 at the corner. They're throwing at 21, and he's reacting well. Right. Mike Hughes has played very well. And, you know, we all thought, you know, well, they're going to do anything at the other corner or opposite AJ. And they didn't, and now you know why they didn't. They had confidence in Mike Hughes. And I think that's well said about Jimmy Lake, who, you know, obviously was in L.A. a year ago after the one-year deal at Washington as their head coach. And I'm a Jimmy Lake guy from the standpoint I just like the way he talks about defense. And I think it's going to get interesting. That's why I'm confident in these next three games. These are really big games, guys. I don't think we can lose sight of how important the next three are in terms of just what you feel like after six games with 11 more left to go, right? Mm. And I'm hopeful that the defense can continue to play at that level and that the offense is, as I think Kirk would probably say, get it sorted out a little bit, especially on third down, because that number just does not fit the model of what this team is, in my opinion.
Now, we can still use more sacks, that's for darn sure. Only the Bucs have less sacks than we do, and at some point you do want to get that number up there, but I'm right. The defense is the least of my problems. How concerned are you with the offensive line? We saw Storm Norton fill in last year for him. Yeah. Newsel at center, it sounds like.
Yeah, I would guess so. I mean, based on everything we saw in the preseason and everything we saw the other night, I would suppose if Dahlman is an extended period of time, then Newsel would certainly be the guy. You know, Javon Gwynn was tried at center early in the preseason to see where that went. I'm not sure that was a positive experience. He's been inactive, and I'm guessing he is a guard.
Okay.
So I don't know if you have to do practice squad elevations or anything like that to you know, kind of buy some insurance behind Newsel, because what you don't want is to not have some guy active on game day if Newsel were to get hurt, right? Mm-hmm. So you got to find whoever your next best guy is who can play center and get him some reps this week behind what Ryan does. Storm Norton, to me, is a guy who knows how to play football, and he's one of those guys like Harvey Dahl, Mike. I think he's got that streak of Harvey Dahl. I think he's got that little Harvey Dahl streak in him. Now, he hadn't shown it very much, but just looking at him, I think he's one that doesn't mind dusting off a pile when he has to. So I think that's the kind of guy you want. I really think it's the kind of guy you want when knowing that 93 may be over there on the other edge on Sunday. And Lord knows he may be going to the Hall of Fame because of success against Atlanta alone. So I'm hoping Cousins hears the history of Cam Jordan against the Falcons, and we address that a little bit too.
Yeah, no doubt. Alave, their offenses look good. You talked about the point differential.
Well, oh, my God.
Well, yeah. Well, here's the deal, though, right? They got a new
Derek Carr looks like he's going to Canton, Carl.
But you got to get pressure on him, Wes. If you do, he doesn't do that.
I said it after week one, and you know, I give him a lot of credit because he's got Carr playing well. But even last week, I thought they blew their opportunities. We watched that game, and we were at the Signia Hotel. We sat there and watched it as it played out. Clint Kubiak's the coordinator, and I think the play calling that he – the main thing is he's gotten Kamara back in the mix, right? I think that's the thing that they were missing, like, these last two seasons. Kamara's been the drink. I mean, he's been the stir that the straw that stirs the drink, should I say. They find him in all these different ways, and I think that, to me, going into this game, Wes, what I'm getting to is we have to stop him. If we stop Kamara, I think we give ourselves a chance to win this game big. If we do not, it's going to be a long afternoon.
All right, let me roll something by you guys. The other day when I was watching some of their games, Kamara looks like he did as a rookie.
Yes.
Now.
Yes.
So remember when New Orleans came here on a Thursday night and he got knocked out of the ball game on the first drive mm-hmm. after he had like four carries and it felt like 60 yards?
Right.
You remember that, Mike?
Yeah.
I mean, he got knocked out of the game in Atlanta and ended up winning the game. I think that might have been – were we wearing the all red that night with the black numbers? I think we may have been.
Anyway, on the new unis. I know what you mean. Go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah. The color rush or whatever that was called right. By the league marketing office.
And, that sounds personal.
The idea of what he's doing is not only is he running the ball, but he's catching the ball out of the backfield. So when you add Olave and you add Shahid and some of these other guys, that creates another valve for Clint Kubiak. And I give Dennis Allen a lot of credit. Go find a guy that, you know, kind of gives your defense a little cushion because at times they've struggled defensively, minus the pass rushing of Jordan and guys like that. I think Brzee in the middle for them in that defensive front's a handful. The kid from Clemson, and we all know how good they've been at linebacker seemingly for the last decade. So, look, it's Falcons Saints. I mean, we can go through personnel and history and all that, but the reality of it is Atlanta's got to find a way to win the ball game and dictate the tempo of the game. I think dictating the tempo on Sunday is as important as it's been in any of the three previous games, for sure.
Talking with our man, Wes Drewham. He and Arch, man, have a 1 o'clock. We found that 8 to 9 hours of pregame, even though we're seasoned professionals, was still very difficult to shake off on Monday morning, Wes.
Wait a second. Carl's already told me twice you were at the fabulous Signia Hotel.
Yes, we were.
So don't tell me that your 8 or 9 hours of pregame run-up was too much for a body by Adonis that you have when it comes to tailgating, Bill.
I got to be honest, though. We were dragging yesterday. Carl, am I lying?
No.
We were dragging.
It was and here's the thing. This is part of it. Because I said to everybody, pace yourself. And, you know, after we got done with our show, I necessarily didn't pace myself.
Yeah, so, we didn't follow our own advice.
Yeah, so that's why, yeah. Like, as the game, you know, went on, it got to, like, you know, the game kicks off at 8:20. I know you're fresh. You know, you and Arch are ready to go.
Oh, yeah, I'm fresh, all right. I flew in from Boston that morning. Go ahead.
Oh, God, that's right. Because he's doing it. Yeah,
but by 10 o'clock, you know, you're like, okay, let's go. You know? So, but listen, I want more Sunday night games. Let me ask you this before we let you go. It's West Durham.
Okay.
I don't think anybody's beating Miami in the ACC. I'm watching, Wes, and I know you're calling these games. And listen,
sure.
Clemson has looked like a completely different team after that Georgia loss.
That's a fact.
Miami, though, I'm just impressed with Cam Ward and his coolness. This kid's got 14 touchdowns, two interceptions, and he's already thrown for damn near 1,500 yards. Okay?
Right.
They're 4-0. They're at home this – matter of fact, they play Friday night. They're 4-0. I'm just saying, you tell me. I don't think anybody's beating Miami in the ACC.
Okay. All right. You can stand on that for a while.
Okay.
That's good.
Okay.
I mean, I wouldn't disagree with you. Right. I mean, but I also think, too, Louisville's got the right kind of mix to cause a problem.
Okay.
Clemson definitely has the right kind of mix to cause a problem. And I tweeted this out the other day. I don't know what – I mean, they've moved on from game one. Against Georgia.
Yeah.
Clemson's moved on.
Yeah, big time.
And Clemson's going to be the case study of, like, Ohio State the first year of the CFP when they lost to one of Mike's schools in Virginia Tech and then came back to, you know, ultimately win the national championship. Clemson may be our one-loss case study in the CFP this year. We'll see. Because if Clemson and Miami end up playing for the championship and Miami wins, Miami gets the automatic. Is Clemson and two losses going to be good enough to get in? I would say yes, but that's me. If they run the table the rest of the way. So it's going to be interesting. It really is. I think that these are all good conversations. But, yeah, Miami right now, absolutely. But can Miami avoid Miami-ing?
Uh-oh.
And you know what I mean.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
But I think with the right quarterback, I think the coach, I don't think they can screw this one up. They've got it. And, by the way, they're going to give FSU some payback for 2 years ago with the Hard Rock. That's going to be a tough one. Yeah.
Who did you just mention?
Starts with an S, ends with an S.
Oh, wait a second. I hadn't heard of
him. Yeah. Wait. Before we talk about them, Mike, let me tell you where I am Saturday night.
SMU?
first ever Atlantic Coast Conference game for Southern Methodist University is your beloved Seminoles Saturday night, 8 o'clock at Gerald Ford. No, not the President's Stadium,
the other one,
in Dallas.
Yeah,
yeah, it's a good,
yeah,
it's a good environment, Wes.
I was going to go, Wes. I was all excited about that, and then the season started.
Well, let me tell you, they just hung 60-odd on TCU last week.
Yeah. I saw it.
They won the skillet.
You guys haven't scored. You guys haven't scored 66 this season.
No, we'd like a refund on DJ Ukulele.
That's not right.
Hey, real quick, Wes, before we cut you loose.
Sometimes you win in the portal, sometimes you lose, Carl.
Yeah. Yes, sir.
And we got outbid for Cam. Real quick, Alabama, Georgia. Georgia has an Alabama problem, as Carl likes to say. Is that swing around to Kirby this weekend?
I will say this. Georgia has been, even with the less than stellar effort, according to the head coach in the Bluegrass against the Cats, I would say this. Until somebody gets Georgia, not named Texas, I would lean Georgia at this point.
It's going to be,
I would lean Georgia. That they are, in the times I've been able to see them, and I haven't seen every game, I saw a majority of the Clemson game, they have looked the best of any team I've seen. Now, Texas is in that conversation. Ohio State's in that conversation. Alabama has looked very good. Ole Miss has looked very good. But have they looked like Georgia? No. But we'll see Saturday. That's why we play the games, boys.
Cannot wait. Wes, thanks again, man. We got to run. Appreciate you. And, guys, you can listen to Wes and Arch with the call, Saints. It's going to be big. It always is on Sunday right here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Thank you again. All right. We got to run. We're coming back. Yeah, man, no man's on the way. In the 4 o'clock hour, we will talk about the Dogs and one of the major keys to victory. Yeah, I know it's Tuesday. We got to talk about what they absolutely have to do, and we will at 4 o'clock. Coming up, we'll talk some Dogs and college football. Also, we will dive back into our conversation about the Braves, who have a huge series against the Mets. It's all or nothing. And we'll talk to Grant McCauley as well along the way. 404-726-0929. And you'll hear from our manager, Brian Snicker, who went on the Steakhouse earlier today talking about this series and what it means. So stay tuned for all of that. Right now, let's get to Yeah Man, No Man. Turtle is out today. Big O has got Yeah Man, No Man. Turtle's coming on after we get done with the night show. What is happening? And by the way, real quick, we're going to be at Flower Branch tomorrow. We'll talk to Coach Ra as we do each and every week on this program. We'll have a couple players as well, so make sure you tune in as we turn the page and get ready for the Saints. Oh, what is going on today, man?
Not a whole lot, gentlemen. I don't know if you guys know this. The NBA teams are starting to do their preseason media rounds. So today,
crazy,
we got the champion Boston Celtics and all of their guys, Jason Tatum, Al Horford, all those guys, meeting with the media.
How old is Horford now, 50?
38.
Okay.
Close.
All right.
He's not far off.
Old man River.
Yeah, I'm glad, I'm happy he won a chip. I am. He was great for the Hawks. He just wasn't a superstar, and his role there is great. I just wondered how old he was. Okay, go ahead.
Is he a Hall of Famer?
Who?
Al Horford, is he a Hall of Famer?
No, he's a really good NBA player, but he's not a Hall of Famer. I mean, if Robert Horry's not a Hall of Famer, Carl, then Al Horford's not a Hall of Famer.
He's right.
Okay.
I mean, I love it. I mean, look, what he did, we all thought, remember, like, Al's like, I'm going to Boston. He'll be appreciated up there. We're like, no, you're not going to be appreciated up there. They're going to run you out of town. And he was a perfect piece. And he, as you know, you always like to say, Carl, know your role. You know, and he's been a perfect complimentary piece. And he's also come up big in big moments and also been the consummate role player the last couple of years. And, you know, it's guys that are making a lot more money than him that have kind of kept them from maybe having another championship up there.
Yeah. Listen, Al's got a beautiful wife. He's filthy rich. And now he's a champion. I think I'd take that over being a Hall of Famer. But no, I do not think he is worthy of that.
By the way, he's going to start the season, I think, as the center for that team because Porzingis, I don't know if you remember, he had that weird ankle injury
during
the finals that, like, was something that was really, really rare. And he played a game, and then all of a sudden they were like, yeah, nah, we can't have you play anymore. So he'll start the season at center. But Jalen Johnson answering questions. They asked him about, you know, the Olympic snub, I guess. And I guess he's got stuff coming out later on to kind of – let everyone know his stance or the background or how he feels about that. You remember it was the Grant Hill apparently keeping him out of the Olympics because he was a conspiracy theorist and all that fun stuff, yes. But fun part came when a photo was shown of Jalen working out. And that's his big thing now, I guess, with athletes is pool workouts. They get in the bottom of the pool and they start like, – I guess in Jalen's case, dribbling a basketball and lifting weights. Jalen listed a very interesting thing that he's very good at that kind of blew my mind.
Even though I did all that traveling, this is probably, I say it every year, this is the hardest I probably ever worked.
How do you do that?
That's scary. Well,
how do you stay down in the water, though? How you stay that? You be like posing in that thing
so
like a statue.
I could
probably hold my breath for like 3+ minutes underwater.
Remember our moment a few years ago when I said that I thought the world record for holding your breath underwater was like 60 minutes or something?
What is and it? It was like 10.
I got it written down. It's 24 minutes 30.
Yeah, I mean, guys that do the deep diving, Carl, you know, those unassisted divers, free divers, they call it. Those guys can hold their breath that long. The average person can hold their breath anywhere from 30 to 90 seconds.
By the way, three minutes? Yeah.
He's an elite athlete, Carl.
I know he is.
He's the top 1% of American sports stars.
But here's the deal with the free diving. Those guys train for that.
Right.
I don't know if he's trained his body for that. He is an elite athlete, there's no doubt. But you still have to specifically train your lungs for that. And these free divers, Mike, they go down. How deep do those guys go down?
If you and I did it, we'd get the bends. That's
correct.
How far those guys go down.
So I just, like, I love Jay. I think he's the best player on that team. We've talked about it over and over again. Despite what Tatum does, he ain't the best player on that team. But I don't believe him on this. 3 minutes?
I asked this question. I brought this up earlier, and Abe Gordon was in the control room, and I was like, yeah, 3 minutes. That sounds like a long time. And Abe, very quickly, it's not that long. You can, like, do that in 25 days. Abe said you can train 25 days.
For those,
take you for 3 minutes
for those, Abe,
water.
Who don't know about Abe, you know, if you listen, we presume you listen to the whole station. You start with the morning shift. I'm the meat man all the way to say thank you, Cha-Cha, along to Andy Randy. You know, Abe is the guy who literally, he's the guy, Carl, who has an opinion
on everything.
On everything.
That's why
Abe. You know, Abe, it's like, yeah, I was always, I've always wondered how those guys do those, you know, those climbs, man, how they get acclimated to Everest. Oh, it's easy. You go up there, you spend 2 weeks in Nepal, you work your way up by 15,000. You ask him anything. You know, you ask, Abe, I was wondering, you think you can make me a couple $100 bills? Yeah, counterfeiting. I go watch the movies, Live and Die in LA. It's pretty easy. You got to put some red ink in there. He literally is that guy.
He is.
Case in point, I sent him an article yesterday about somebody broke a record for the fastest climb on the Appalachian Trail. Like, they did it, I think, like 40 days, so something insane. I was like, that sounds pretty insane. I don't know if they probably felt good or, like, they felt well after that. They was like, they're okay. Yeah, they recovered.
I love this. I want to see Abe do this. By the way, they say 12 to 18 meters is what these free divers go down. That's how far they go down. And that's a long way, okay? So I'm just telling you, I love Jalen. I just don't think he's in 3 minutes. Who's holding? Can you do it?
Absolutely not.
I can't do it. Mike, could you do it right now? Just go underwater for 3 minutes?
I could. I'm going to say I could do that. I could do under probably 90 seconds because I used to do scuba back in the day.
Yeah.
And you got to be able to hold your breath in case you have problems with your tank. But of course, yeah, I'd say 90 seconds tops for me. Maybe that's you know, a little bit more. But no 3 minutes, mate. No way.
All right. Last one here. Yesterday on Pat McAfee was Bill Belichick's weekly appearance.
Okay.
And we mentioned earlier about Mike Tomlin and kind of like me in college, not one putting a label on things. We don't have to have a starter right now. You don't have to call Justin Fields a starter. Bill Belichick, though, at the moment says that Pittsburgh is in the most advantageous position in the NFL.
That's a real deal in Pittsburgh. They had no idea if either quarterback was going to work. They see Justin Fields work and they're like, that's all we needed. That's literally all we needed. Hopes are very high over there, Coach.
Well, everybody's worried about the Pittsburgh quarterback situation. They might have the best one in the league. You know, you have an experienced guy coming behind Fields if you need him. But they're playing well as a team. But, again, a long way to go.
Yeah, man, no, man. Pittsburgh has the best quarterback situation in the NFL.
Well, it ain't Carolina.
Yeah, I mean, you think about how quality your backups are, and, you know, I mean, you could argue we're in a good position. We just don't know what Michael Penix Jr. We think we know what Michael Penix Jr. is going to be, but, you know, you see rookies like Jaden Daniels last night just lighting the league on fire. But I would say we're in a pretty good spot, but Russell certainly, you know, has been there and done that. So, I mean, Mumbles isn't completely wrong.
No, they've got two guys that have been starters. One's a Super Bowl champion, and one was drafted to be a franchise starter, you know, with the Chicago Bears. Yeah, they're in a really good place. You know, this is why the Chargers, who will use him this week, Taylor Heineke, you know, they traded for him. I mean, the injury to Herbert is a big deal. That's not the same team without their starter. Tua is down. Miami doesn't look the same with Skylar Thompson. There are a lot of teams who would be in that predicament.
Steelers aren't. And I hope Justin keeps playing well for them. But, Mike, if something is to happen or was, you'd feel good about rolling Russ in there just because of what he brings with the experience. I agree with Belichick on that one.
On that note, gentlemen, I'm going to go ahead and research how to hold my breath for extended periods of time and get up on out of here.
All right, just call Abe again. 404-726-0929.
Abe, could you shoot yourself into outer space?
He'd come up with a way.
Oh, yeah.
Just give me 2 weeks. I can
give
do
me $1,200.
It.
I get to Home Depot, and you get some liquid nitrogen. What?
Yeah. Well, here's the deal.
Liquid oxygen?
This thing about 3 minutes, right? Because I forgot. I had watched that show on Netflix about the free divers. Great show. But you're diving like 50 to 70 feet down while they're holding their breath. And if you're holding your breath for 3 minutes, how far could you swim down? Abe, I'll leave you with that trivia question. All right, Dog Report's coming up. What do they absolutely need to do against Alabama? I mean, if this does not happen, they may be in for a long night. We'll tell you what it is next on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.